Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist with Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. Our guest this hour is Marcus Deep, who is a 24-year-old Danish transsexual YouTuber who speaks out against radical gender ideology and fights for women's and children's rights. You can check out his YouTube channel at YouTube, and it is titled The Offensive Tranny. Welcome to our show, Marcus. How long have you been doing that, Marcus?
For about 4 years, maybe five, but I've worked as a full-time YouTuber for 2 years, or a year and a half, I guess.
I'm always amazed at the success of some YouTubers such as yourself. I think there's an energy that attracts a certain audience. We're grateful that you are successful, Marcus.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it reminds me of you being a TV personality, right? You have to have a certain presentation, a style, figure out some niche topic or niche audience. So it's a lot like being in television. It's like a miniature version of television. That's how I see it. I think my wife, gosh, it's been over 20 years now, said to me back then, you should do a YouTube channel. This is when YouTube was very early. And I said, a YouTube channel? What is that? And why should I do it? And I think now, if I had started back then doing it, I'd probably have this huge following, because back then everybody followed everybody that was on it, you know, and then it just grew and grew. So, and I probably would have been talking about trans topics. So it would have been interesting to see the evolution of that.
Well, I grew up watching YouTubers, so maybe it helped me along the way. Who knows?
So, Marcus, you do have a YouTube channel. It's called The Offensive Tranny. I think that's hysterical. I relate to the word tranny. When I first came out as trans back in 1999, 2000, I referred to myself as a tranny queer. And tranny came from drag culture, which is part of the gay community, gay men's community. And queer was a word that was being repurposed coming out of the 1980s with the religious right here in the United States. Calling ourselves queer was like a fight back expression. I don't use it any longer, even though it's trying to make a comeback again and it's being used, very much popularized. People refer to the LGBT community now as the queer and trans community. And I personally don't like that, but you know, people can call themselves whatever they want to call themselves. I appreciate that you use the word tranny because you're talking about yourself, right? And when I use the term, I'm talking about myself. I've noticed that it's not helpful to refer to other people using that term because they might take offense to it. So I'm wondering, how is it that you've come to embrace this term tranny, and what makes you offensive?
I just want to clarify. I think it's obvious, but I don't seriously identify as a tranny. But I like to call myself a tranny once in a while. I like to name my social media that because it stands out. I think we can all agree. And most people are not used to seeing that, especially seeing trans people themselves calling them trannies. And I don't use it for other people. I would never, unless I know the person really well, but I don't know that many trans people. So I got the idea from, there's a right-wing political commentator personality called Slightly Offensive, Elijah Schaefer, I guess his name is. And I like that name. And then I was like, when I had to create my name in the beginning over 4 years ago, I was like, I'm offensive. Well, not really, but some people think I am. And I'm a tranny. I'm the offensive tranny. So that's how I came up with it.
It's very catchy. I've had talks with another trans man about how we should start a podcast and call it the Cranky Trannies, because we're both older gentlemen. And I liken it to those old crotchety guys in the Muppets up in the balcony at the opera. We're like those guys, the cranky trannies. So far, it hasn't taken off. I hold out hope that we'll still be able to do it one day. You say, of course, you don't consider yourself offensive. I mean, I don't consider myself transphobic, but people still call me that, even though I'm a trans man. Why do people think you're offensive?
Everything. Everything I say is apparently offensive. I talk about gender ideology, and I talk about reality. And I guess reality and biological facts are offensive, and it is offensive for me to talk about it and to point it out and use it in arguments and stuff. So when I talk about there's only two genders, trans women aren't women, they're biological males with gender dysphoria, And sometimes I say trans women are men with gender dysphoria because I do believe sex and gender are the same, which is funny. Just a side note, in Denmark, where I'm from, and in Danish, we only have one word to describe gender. We have a word for man and woman and for gender. And if we want to talk about sex, we just say biological gender. And I know there are other languages where they don't have two separate words, but we can get into that later if you want. So I'm also very much against children transitioning, and apparently it's offensive to believe in children's rights and believing in protecting children from ideologues and from dangerous medications.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk more about that. You said that when you talk about reality, you say there are only two genders. What I say is there are only two sexes, but there's many genders, or at least many gender ways to express your gender, right? Because gender is the more social component of our sex. What we wear, how we style our hair, our mannerisms, right? Now, of course, this is not dismissing the fact that there are people who have chromosomal abnormalities or differences that are not XX and XY, but we're not going to get into a big biology and physiology lecture. We're talking about phenotypes and genotypes. That's a different podcast, right? But the idea of, yes, there are basically two sexes. And even when there's a chromosomal configuration that's different from that, the reproductive systems of those individuals tend to still be leaning towards a female or male reproductive system, whether they're operable or not, right? Whether they can produce offspring. I find it really interesting, yeah, too, also that people find that very offensive to talk that way. I refer to myself as a trans man who is female, or I might say, my sex is female, I live in the world as a man. Sometimes I jokingly refer to myself as a dyke who looks like a man. I'm just trying to figure out different funny ways to say it, where I can still acknowledge my biological reality and my social reality. Because my social reality is I'm not treated like a woman. I know the difference. I lived as one for 39 years, so I know that there's a difference. But I want my biology to be recognized by my doctors in particular. But my neighbors don't know that I'm female sexed. But it is my social reality. So it sounds like you and I are talking about similar topics and having similar responses, except you're on YouTube. The vitriol that you get is magnified exponentially compared to the level that I get. And I've made a choice not to be on social media. Not because of that, because I got off social media 10 years ago before it really got bad, but I'm glad to be off of it. So how do you handle all of that? You must be getting negative attention. You're young. You're 24 years old. When I was 24, I don't know that I would have been able to withstand that level of vitriol. So how is it that you are able to just keep going? And people can't see you, but we can. On and I can see you. You look very healthy. You look like you are a solid, grounded person. You're coming across as very reasonable. I've listened to enough of your videos. You're articulate. So you seem to be handling it very well. Where does that come from, the ability to do that?
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And I do feel great. I do suffer from side effects, but let's talk about that another day or later. So I do experience some hate. Sometimes I say a lot of hate, but I mostly receive love. I receive so much more love than hate, but I've also received death threats and essay threats. And I think it's because I am pissing off some really hateful people and people who are full of hate, anger. And I also think they're afraid of what I'm doing. I'm exposing trans activists who have, for the last few years, been the face of the trans community, trying to speak on our behalf and on my behalf. So then I'm like, no, 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 you're wrong. Everything you say is wrong. And then these people are afraid of what my channel can do, what my voice can do. So I think those people, those really hateful people who threaten me, they see me as a threat. And that's why I'm not bothered with it at all. I don't really care. I go on with my day after reading those horrible messages or comments. And I think there are a couple of reasons to that. So first, I'm in Denmark and a lot of these people are in the US. And even if they're in the UK, still not down my street. They're still not in the same country as me. And I think that's also why I had the courage to speak up and to make a channel, because I'm actually speaking in another language. For some reason, it's easier. I hate getting interviewed in Danish and I get so nervous. because it's suddenly so real. So it was easier for me to start my channel because I have to speak in another language. And yeah, it's also easier receiving negative comments due to that. But it's also because it's the internet. I would care as much as if people on the street were yelling at me saying they wanted to do X, Y, and Z. So because I'm looking at a screen when I read these comments, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, there's a sense of you're removed from it.
Yeah.
Okay, but there are trans people in Denmark, clearly. You're there. There's others. Are there fewer of the more radical trans activists in Denmark that you're not encountering them when you do go to, say, a public event where there may be a large trans cohort there?
Well, yeah, there are not a lot of radical trans activists here. No, that's true. I'm not, I usually don't attend any LGBT events, to be honest. I never have. But the last time I attended one, all the radical trans activists were there. So it was, what, five people? And I think that's really funny to some degree because it just shows that there are not a lot. But I will say that there is an LGBT organization here that's funded by the government, receive over $1 million every year by the government, and they're extremely radical. Believe they're pro children transitioning, believing trans women are women. It's transphobic if you don't want to sleep with trans people. And unfortunately, this LGBT organization has existed since the 40s. But a couple of years ago, the board got hijacked by radicals. I think it's something you see in the West in general. It's not just my country. So unfortunately, those people have taken over this really amazing LGBT organization and they're destroying the cause.
I think that's what happened to Stonewall in the UK. I think that's what I've heard happened there. You said trans women are not women. I would say the way I frame it in my mind is trans women are trans women. They're not female. Some of them present, or I should say, some of them blend in perfectly well among women, but they're still not female. I think that's part of the issue when you talk about reality and the biology of things is it didn't used to be offensive or even a problem at all to acknowledge that we had a biological or natal sex, but we were taking hormones and having surgeries and changing our government identity documents to, as my friend Aaron Kimberly refers to it, to be like a legal fiction so that we could live in the world in a way that didn't bring a whole lot of scrutiny to us, a lot of negative attention. Before I transitioned, I was a very masculine appearing lesbian, and that brought me a lot of negative attention when I was out in public. And I thought, well, if I transition and I look more male, I look like a man, but I know I'm not going to be one. I wonder if that will improve my well-being, my social experience in the world. And it has significantly. Pretty early on, it was wearing a binder and starting testosterone. And I noticed a huge shift in how I was feeling, but also how people were responding to me. But this idea of the denial that biology and such thing as biological sex is a construct, and I don't understand it. I never hear a transsexual talk this way, right? And both of us use that term as how we refer to ourselves. It's not my identity. It's just my label or who I am. I'm a transsexual. I don't identify as a transsexual. And I heard you say you don't identify as a tranny, but you use the term. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a conversation with like a 19-year-old this past weekend, and they were talking about, well, I had this identity, and then I had this identity, and then I had this identity. And they were asking me about my identity. I said, well, let's back up a little bit because I'm much older than you. You know, they were 19. I'm almost 60. I don't talk that way. I never identified as a lesbian. I was a lesbian. I don't identify as trans. I am trans. And so I think sometimes even just talking that way gets people upset.
For real.
It's the identity politics that people refer to. You talked about that organization that's funded by the government. I think I listened to one of your videos where you were talking about another organization that maybe you are involved in.
I did start, and I was the president of a new anti-woke LGBT organization here. I'm not a part of it anymore. We had some conflict, so I left the organization, but it was my idea. And, you know, I talked to my boyfriend a couple of years ago, and I was like, we need something different than this crappy, or what is now a crappy organization ruining the LGBT acceptance. And then we got together with our friends at the time, and we created, and we had a lot of success. I've been on national TV and on the news a couple of times, and they still exist. I'm doing my own thing. I still try to fight the fight or fight the cause, but just on my own, in my own way, in Denmark too.
a lot of the countries around the world, or at least the Western world, they have formed organizations called LGB Alliance. And I understand why they're doing that, because if you deny there's such thing as sex, then what do you do with the homosexuality? What do you do with same sex attraction when there's no sex? So I understand why there's the LGB Alliance. One of the things that I found hopeful about the organization that you were involved in that still exists, thankfully, that it was inclusive of the trans community. And I know here in the US and also in Canada, there's the LGBT Courage Coalition that puts out a Substack article every day and is involved in a lot of different efforts in the US and Canada. I wouldn't call it an LGBT organization in the same way. It is a group of people that are from the community, and I'm happy that they're inclusive of the trans community, because I think that that's more likely to be the successful route, to work with individuals who come from our broader communities that want to work on issues together. And most of it currently is focused on this issue around kids who are gender nonconforming or are expressing some sort of stress about their sex, their body in particular, the potential or the future maturation of their body, like going into puberty, is starting to upset them. And so I know that you talk a lot about this issue, about, let me word it in a way that you worded it to me. You said, I'd love to talk about children transitioning and why you speak out against it, and also debunking the slogan, protect trans kids. I'd love to talk about that, because I get asked when I speak, which is, of course, not as much as you do, I get asked, well, you're trans, don't you want other trans people to have the same access to care? And I was like, yes, of course, as soon as they turn 18. But we need to safeguard children, because their bodies are developing, their minds are developing, their sense of self is developing. I think we should let that development process go unhindered.
We have a short disclaimer to make. The information covering health and mental health care is for informational purposes only and does not replace your providers from whom you receive treatment and care. And by providers, we mean mental health care providers, such as therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists, and of course, doctors and their team. Let's get back to Xander.
Protect trans kids. What do you mean by debunking that slogan? Give us some ideas or examples of what you mean about that.
Sure. And I completely agree with everything you just said. So the people chanting protect trans kids, they're not necessarily harming the children themselves, but they're advocating for harming children and children's bodies, but also mental health. What I mean by debunk, protect trans kids, first of all, there's no such thing as a trans child. There are very few children in the world who deal with the symptoms of gender dysphoria, something they can get diagnosed later on in life, not as children. That's crazy, because children are constantly going through phases. That's the point of childhood and growing up. Second of all, no matter what type of kid we're talking about, even if we pretend that trans kids exist, that you know when children are children that they're trans, it's going through the medical transition or giving them puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries. Well, surgeries is a given, so let's just stick to the hormones, will harm them. Even the gender dysphoric children would be harmed. So I'm, of course, against it. And I believe it's, honestly, I believe it's disgusting to say, to claim you believe in protecting children when you advocate for the sterilization of children who are gender confused, because that is what the puberty blockers and the cross-sex hormones will do to the child. And these people are also calling people like me, you and others, the immoral ones, or the even the transphobic bigots. The list goes on and on. It's just very upside down, I think.
One of the things that I believe a lot of people don't know about the history of trans people being able to access hormones and surgeries, and where it started, it didn't start here in the United States, right? It started over, I believe, in Scandinavia. And until fairly recently, one of the requirements of being able to go all the way with your transition and getting your identity documents with the government changed, you had to be sterilized. That was a component, that was a required component of completing your transition. And when I think about that, and then I consider, oh, with the Dutch protocol, where they were putting children on puberty blockers because their hope was that if they didn't go through puberty, they wouldn't develop the obvious secondary characteristics like developing breasts or developing an Adam's apple right? So all of the markers of femininity and masculinity, if they didn't develop those things, they would be more easily able to blend in society with the men and the women. And so one, I'm not sure why more non-binary people aren't upset about that concept. Then there's also the issue of the puberty blockers will cause this infertility or sterilization. But at the time it was, well, it didn't matter because that was going to happen anyway. They were going to have a hysterectomy or an orchiectomy to remove the testicles and they were going to be sterile. So when you talk about it in this context, in this day and age where sterilization is no longer a requirement, I notice when I bring up infertility or sterilization, what I experience, I think, is people in cognitive dissonance. They just don't want to hear it. They don't know how to respond to it. So they'll switch the topic or they'll call me a name or they'll make up some argument that they think is going to be successful in championing their cause. I don't think it's working. I think more and more people are now starting to find out because of the ways that the policies and the rules around transition are changing around Europe and Scandinavia. The fact that in Britain recently, they just went through a 4-year review process of medicalizing children in England, Scotland, and Wales. But then they looked at the research from all around the world. They spent 4 years doing that. And so now this CAST review final report, it's fairly damning when you look at what they discovered. They have 32 recommendations. And it seems to me that the National Health Services in Britain are complying with those recommendations. They agree with them and they're starting to change everything. So I think the United States and Canada in some ways are the outliers, and Australia. Australia is also an outlier as far as a lot of the Western countries go. When you're talking with people like me, we're having conversation, it's on a podcast, you do other people's podcasts. Are you finding that people are struggling to not just understand, but accept this new research data that's coming out?
We are going to take our first commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Marcus Deep. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Marcus Deep, a 24-year-old Danish transsexual YouTuber speaking out against radical gender ideology and who fights for women's and children's rights. Let's pick up where we left off.
It's so damning. I don't understand why it's not having more of an effect in the United States. It's hard for me to understand why, but I'm wondering, what's been your interaction with people on this topic like?
It's difficult because in Denmark, culturally, we're the same as you, but we're 5 years behind sometimes. So people in Denmark don't even know about non-binary yet or at all or will never. So if I talk about this topic, if I have a conversation with a regular Danish person, they just can't wrap their head around the fact that we're doing this to children. Because I would say any sane adult would be like, well, that's a kid. A kid is a kid. We can't medically touch kids. That's horrible. And kids can't consent to these blockers. And this whole thing about, oh, you can just stop your puberty is BS. It's not true. So I think it is really interesting. And I love talking to regular people here about this topic because they're not brainwashed. They're not influenced by this propaganda from the trans community. The last few years, I've been talking to so many politicians, journalists, activists, tons of people. And there's some people who still try their hardest to hold on to this narrative that, well, it's good for them. If they don't transition, they would off themselves. It's so interesting because there's something about me being trans and me being calm. And I try to be respectful and just down to earth when I talk to people, meet people in real life. They actually don't argue that much with me. To a certain point, they give up because they think I know better because I'm trans. I call it trans privilege because then my gay friends or my boyfriend would not experience the same. So I love talking to people due to that. It's fair that they listen to me because I'm trans, because it's not just like being gay. You know, I have actually been on testosterone for 5 years. I've received 2 surgeries. So it's like, maybe I do have something to say. Maybe my perspective is kind of relevant, if that makes sense.
When did you feel solid about who you are to proceed to receive hormone treatment and then opt for surgical transition?
It was a journey, of course, mentally. And I was a mess when I was around 15. And when I was 16, I was, okay, there's this thing called trans man, and I'm going to identify as such or call myself this thing. If it's not me, then it's not me. I can call myself something else. It's not a big deal because I didn't tell anyone at the time. So, but I never looked back. But what happened was right after was I slowly came out to people. I was in the closet for a year. It took me a year to tell my family. But within that year, I told my friends and coworkers at the time. When I came out to my family at age 17, I lived only socially as Marcus for 3 years. I changed my wardrobe. I experimented with my hair. And even when I turned 18, because I kind of knew when I was, I don't know, 17, that I wanted to go on testosterone and all this. There's just something that was holding me back even when I was of age, when I was 18. And I think it's because I wasn't ready, because 18 is really young. And I think I knew at the time, or my subconscious was like, oh, this is permanent. It's not like changing my hair. I'm going to be on it for the rest of my life. So yeah, I was 19 and a half when I applied for testosterone at the trans clinic here. And I started testosterone at age 20 and then got surgeries. I got top surgery at age 21. And then I got radical hysterectomy at age 22. So yeah.
Marcus, I was thinking about the slogan, you know, the protect trans kids. And I always like to find a way to understand where people are coming from or what's motivating. And so I've been asking questions and paying attention for the last few years. And what makes the most sense to me is that there are people who are convinced that they're doing the right thing in championing minors being able to access not therapy. They'll say, well, if gender-affirming care also includes therapy, okay, let's accept that. But the puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, the surgeries, if we allow children to go through that process younger, their adult lives will be less full of conflict. It'll be better for them. There's no way to know that because there are so many trans adults that are having terrible lives, who are suffering with mental illness, who are homeless, who are drug addicted, who are in prisons. So there's no guarantee that just because you can do a gender transition, your life is going to be significantly better. It's not a sound argument, but I understand it. And when I think back to recent history, you go back 20, 30 years, I remember, and I'm old enough to remember, when gay kids were being thrown out of their homes, we'd use the language gay kids. because you know who you're sexually attracted to in your early adolescence. So we can say, yeah, gay kid, you know, lesbian kid. They were being kicked out of their homes by their parents. They were being sent to, not all of them, of course, right? They were being sent to tough love camps. They were being enrolled in ex-gay ministries through their churches. So the religious right really did had an impact on our community. In the United States in particular, and the AIDS and HIV and gay men on their deathbed being disowned by their family. And so living through that and losing friends and experiencing homelessness as a teenager myself, being in a group home where any slight indication of being lesbian was something that got punished out of us. So I understand this conversion therapy. I did almost a year of that when I was in the institution as a teenager. So I understand the fear that people have and the desire to protect young people from having an experience. I understand it. I don't want any young person to go through what I went through. And I don't believe that that means that I have to endorse putting children on medications that can have lifelong negative outcomes. When you talk about puberty blockers, it's not just puberty that's blocked. There's a lot of things that get blocked. And this is more Dr. On's area of knowledge as a person who's studied this, teaches about it. It was a nurse for many, many years, right? So it stops skeletal development, brain development, social development, our ability to integrate into our peer groups. And so when people say, oh, but it's reversible, the claim they're making is based on a completely different cohort. It's children with precocious puberty who start puberty at a very young age, like 4, 5, 6 years old, and they put them on these puberty blocking medications. And then when they hit 10, 11, 12, they take them off and their body goes back to going into puberty in a natural way, their natal puberty. With these kids where they're putting them on puberty blockers who have gender nonconforming behaviors or is stress related to their gender or their bodies, most of them are going on cross-sex hormones in their adolescence. And therefore, we still have no real knowledge on a broad scale level what the impact is going to be on those young adults and those older adults. As far as I know, there's only one major study that's been conducted in the United States that includes multiple universities and multiple providers with a lot of kids. And to this day, and they received a lot of money from the government, millions of dollars to do this study. They've only published one really small journal article that had findings that are completely different from what the study said they were going to study. They changed the parameters of the study after getting the money for it and after doing the research, because my assumption is they're not coming up with the results they want. And so I think it's in our best interest to know what the actual results are. That's why I value what the other countries are doing with their medical boards and what the NHS did in England with the CAS review. They're looking at what is actually happening, not what we wish would happen, not keeping the lid shut on it so that the religious right or the conservatives or the anti-trans people don't get a hold of it and use it as a weapon against us. I understand all that. I understand it. And I think it's in the best interest of the public for public health reasons that we know exactly what the outcomes are of young children once they go into their adolescence who have been on these blockers and then go on cross-sex hormones. I don't think there's any good reason to keep that information from us.
One of the concerns with starting hormone treatment as an adolescent is to do a thorough medical and mental health history. Not just on the individual, but also on their family members, if they're related. I suppose in the case of adoption, that would make it a little more challenging. And the reason why I emphasize this is because sometimes, and we don't really know with the utmost certainty which came first, the chicken or the egg, we do know that hormones can unleash mental comorbidities. And so the question that some of us have is, would this mental comorbidity, whatever the diagnosis is, would that have surfaced had cross-sex hormones not been initiated? It's just something to think about. So I have met some of these kids who were on puberty blockers, went on to cross-sex hormones. They're adults today and they're healthy and they're happy. Studies help inform the public on what has worked and what hasn't worked. But getting back to the initiation of cross-sex hormones, in many of these cases, we do know that with the onset of puberty, sometimes these comorbidities are unleashed. And I'm not talking about cross-sex hormones at this point. I'm talking about the brain releasing these hormones so that these hormones then travel to the receptor sites, because receptor sites receive hormones for purposes to develop secondary sex characteristics, hinging on whether or not the individual's receptor sites are there, or in some cases they need to be stimulated to begin the process of developing secondary sex characteristics. That has more to do with the intersex individual, and that's not the same as what we're discussing here. But for purposes of research, we need this information. We need studies to be able to determine these situations that I just mentioned with the comorbidities, the mental comorbidities and medical comorbidities that are unleashed. We haven't even studied those yet. And again, we need to be able to trace individuals' history, and not over a short period, but longitudinal studies are needed here. This is why data is significant, and we need it, and we can't just bar and stop everything. If we're going to work with adolescents, it probably do need to be placed in a study, as I mentioned, kept in a longitudinal study so that we can determine some of these concerns that we have, whether or not they exist, how frequently these occur among people. And also, we can get some baselines. And in addition, looking at how could we circumvent some of these mental comorbidities that otherwise would remain dormant. And again, we don't really know that per se. As I said, is it the chicken or the egg that came first?
Yeah, sure. That's really interesting, the last thing you said. So I agree with everything that you two just said. I just want to add that I think personally that we have enough evidence that shows this is harming kids. And I think we have enough evidence to stop these transitions for children. That's just my personal opinion. Look at Jazz Jennings. So Jazz hasn't come out as a detransitioner or anything, but that's actually not my point. Jazz, this famous trans kid, biological male, had to get 4 bottom surgeries because due to being on puberty blockers since the age of 11, her penis didn't grow. She had a micro penis. And the length of the penis determines the depth of the neovagina. So they had to use some of her colon, and it was, I mean, just the thought of her getting 4 bottom surgeries is absurd to me. And she got her first bottom surgery at age 17, which is, I think, really unethical, or it is unethical. That's just my opinion. And I think we've heard a lot of detransitioners. We've heard a lot of even trans people who still identify as trans and as the opposite sex. We've heard their stories and about the side effects of the puberty blockers. And maybe I'm just really impatient, but I just don't have the patience. I just don't want to wait for more data to come out. I think we have enough data, if that makes sense, to stop this madness and to protect kids and maybe save the kids who are in this mess right now.
We do have a lot of data. We just don't have all of it. There also isn't a lot of advertising being done. And I mention this because I've sat in a number of these spaces that don't even advertise that they're trans-friendly or LGB-friendly, for that matter, at least in the areas of the country where I've lived, with the exception of California and even the world, because I've lived in different parts of the world. But regardless, what I find to be troublesome is that we can go into, for instance, a gynecologist office, and we can learn all kinds of things just watching their TV monitor. These are very helpful to those who visit and are maybe looking at a procedure in the future. And we could say this about many of these spaces. I have a concern, as many people do, about what we don't know. I'm also concerned when people do share concerns regarding information and data that they have, that we reject that as well. Or even those who remark about their experiences or the experiences of somebody that they know. It could be their child, their sibling, or their loved one. I am concerned that we reject this information. I think we need to pay attention to everything that is reported. And it's for this reason why I feel that should be part of the data gathering.
Just want to clarify that I think we know enough about the moral aspect of it to stop it, because we all know, and the West in general agrees, we all agree in the West on can children consent? We all think no, children cannot consent. on my channel, I always like to say that, how is it ethical for children to make a decision about their future fertility, their future sex life? Because they're going to experience a lot of dysfunction or sexual dysfunction if they go on puberty blockers. How can they make a decision about their future sexual health and their fertility when they're not old enough to have sex at that age? It's disgusting. Because even though I transitioned not that long ago, and I live in a very progressive country, and transsexuals have transitioned for quite a while now, I'm still to this day a guinea pig as an adult, female on testosterone. And my doctors who are assigned to trans clinics, they don't know anything, basically. And that could be due to ideological reasons. But at the end of the day, I'm experiencing quite a long list of side effects. And you would think that doctors know about the side effects, but they don't really. So if I, as a 24-year-old who transitioned 5 years ago, is a guinea pig, what are we doing to kids? First of all, but my point was actually, we can do a lot of data on what happens to an adult female body on testosterone. We can do a lot of research on that. And my point was that we need a lot of research on that. But when it comes to the kids, I just focus on the moral aspect of it. I think it's the most important part. Is it moral to do? Because we can also do a research. Is it healthy? Is it physically healthy to tattoo 10-year-old? Do they risk getting cancer or something because of the ink? Is that really what we need to talk about? Or is it the moral aspect? Can a child consent to having tattoos or other adult things?
We are going to take our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Marcus Deep. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena-sensitive care pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena-sensitive care pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
We're back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Marcus Deep, a 24-year-old Danish transsexual YouTuber speaking out against radical gender ideology and who fights for women's and children's rights. Let's pick up where we left off.
Can a child consent to having tattoos or other adult things?
No, I understand where you're coming from, Marcus. It makes sense to me. I share your frustration that it's not as obvious to enough people yet that can't at least have a moratorium on any additional initiations of treatment with cross-sex hormones or at least puberty blockers in order to figure out, go back and look at all the kids that have gone through those particular clinics and find out. But there's not testing that's done beforehand in a lot of these places. So there's no baseline. They don't know about this. And a lot of information isn't being communicated. I had a conversation this past weekend with a woman who has a daughter who had precocious puberty. And she came to a talk that I was giving on transgender medical care for minors because it was about puberty blockers. And she wanted to know more about them, even though her child had been put on them when she was younger. And she was talking to us afterwards. I was co-presenting, and she said, you know, my daughter's experiencing issue with her vision. She's having bad headaches. She's having some discomfort in her bones. They have to figure that out. Is that your bones are growing discomfort? Right. So they have to figure that all out, but they didn't do any baseline testing. And I do know that at least here in the United States, the FDA is the Food and Drug Administration. They're the ones who oversee our pharmaceutical companies. And they put a, what's called a black box warning label on, I believe it's Lupron, which is one of the puberty blocking drugs, and indicated on that are concerns that this mother has. And she said the doctor who prescribed the puberty blockers for her child never talked to her, never talked to her about that. So you have a government agency that's overlooking all these things. And so they can put a warning on it. But then I think it's a requirement of physicians who are prescribing medications to have a conversation, because it's called informed consent process. Patients need to be informed prior to giving consent. And so if this parent wasn't informed fully before she consented for her child, and this is precocious puberty, we have no idea how many of the kids that have been prescribed puberty blockers because of gender distress or gender dysphoria or gender nonconformity who also have parents who were not fully informed and therefore consented without that information. And so that's what I find alarming. I think we should stop all of it. Maybe it's temporary. Maybe they can figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't cause any adverse outcomes, any negative physical or psychological or social outcomes for children. That'd be great. But we don't know if that's a possibility right now. We don't know it. Well, Marcus, this has been a really wonderful conversation. I'm so thankful that you agreed to come on the Umbrella Hour. I want to give you a moment to tell us anything you want to let the audience know about, if there's something coming up for you, if there's something you'd like them to go and look at.
Thank you so much for having me. I don't have any projects coming up. I chill on my YouTube channel. I make videos here and there, and I talk about lots of different topics. I don't know why I want to say this, but you can't put me in a box. I'm not right wing. I'm not left wing. Well, of course, when I have to vote, I know who I'm going to vote for, but from the outside looking in, the content I make on my channel is extremely politically neutral. And recently I have experienced people, my followers, being disappointed in me because I made a video they disagreed with. And I think that's why I think about it right now. I just say whatever I want to say. You can join and you can, I'm not saying what I'm saying. I'm not advocating for the things I advocate for to please anyone. I want to share my perspective as a transsexual and as someone who is concerned about the community, but not just the LGBT community, but about society, and of course, mostly children. You don't become a right-wing Nazi if you watch my channel, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, it's not that rabbit hole.
No.
Thank you, Marcus. Well said. And again, the YouTube channel is The Offensive Tranny.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. We hope that you enjoyed this hour, and we hope that you tune in next time. Thank you for listening.